Gregoire and Dan Beeston are smart enough to know better.
Welcome to episode 202, Shotgun Noise, of Smart Enough to Know Better.
We're a podcast of science.
And comedy.
And ignorance.
I'm Dan Beeston.
And I'm Gregoire.
And in this episode of Smart Enough to Know Better, I hurt your eyes using your ears.
And the yolks on all of us, or is it?
And then I pop you in the weasel. But before we get there, what happened to you, Gregoire, this week in science?
I have been doing a little bit of genealogy. Bit of genealogy, Dan, and like with the study of where my family comes from.
Oh, that's nice. So when did you become a grandma?
Moving on. And I was just been interested in my genealogical line and where it all comes from. And it's all like very white people and, you know, living in very white places, doing very white things. I found basically nothing new. It was nothing that new. I was just more interested, Dan, in your line. I think I may have found a forebear of yours.
Ooh, really?
Yeah.
So far as I know, most of my ancestors are French and English and Scottish. And the mishmash of those three little Euro tragedies over there.
Okay. You're not from Norway or anything like that.
I don't think that I've got any Norse in me.
Are you sure?
A lot of the English probably have a little bit of Norse in them because those guys put it about.
Yeah, actually they did. The Vikings, we did a whole Danelaw thing. Actually, that makes a lot of sense. Actually, that does make a lot of sense. Maybe you are related to this person.
All the little towns down the coast of Great Britain have names that are a bit more Norse, and all the ones in the middle of the country away from the sea have names that are a bit more Welsh.
Yeah, and it's all very...
Or Roman.
Very lots of Romans. That's the, Danelaw. That's where the Danelaw, there's almost like a perfect line you can find as, this is where the Danish people kind of went to and no further. That's where they conquered. And at the top as well, there's a whole lot of Viking places at the top of Scotland, all with lots of Scandinavian-style names and a lot of blonde people. That's why not everyone in Scotland's like a red-headed hedge. There are lots of blonde people as well because, you know, a lot of people putting it about a bit in very legal and acceptable, 21st century acceptable ways. But anyway.
There is even a town called Beeston over there in Great Britain. So with a castle. It's Castle Beeston.
Castle Beast.
Which is what I call but you think you've found an ancestor of mine.
Yes, I really do. I think I found an ancestor of yours, and that is King Halfdan Olafsson. And King Halfdan Olafsson was the king of Norway in about 9th century, and he was a bit of a dude, and he sort of expanded.
Checks out.
The empires. He expanded the empire, bit. He was well known.
Imagine what he could have done if he was full Dan.
Well, that's right. Well, I think Halfdan works because I think Halfdan, actually the name means half Dane. Does that make sense? Maybe, you know, English side, maybe you just got some Danish, you know, that's where it came from. He was called Halfdan the Mild because he was everyone was like, oh, he's a bit of a chill dude. Yes, he warred like everyone did, but he's a pretty chill dude. He did expand their empire a little bit. He ate an apple.
Yeah, you know, when you eat an apple and you look like you don't give a fuck. Oh, I love eating an apple in a high stress environment.
Oh, right. Yes, I'm sure he did. It's a power move. And so he rewarded his men and women, mainly men, let's face it, his warriors, with a lot of money. He was always like, you fought for me and all my jarls, you've done really well. Please take lots of money. And I was thinking, oh, maybe this guy's Dan, but I've related to Dan. And then I found out his other name because he was half Dan the Mild and his other name is half Dan the Bad Entertainer. And I was like, oh my God, we've absolutely hit. That was what he was called.
Mild and a bad entertainer.
So he was half Dan, the bad entertainer. And I was like, oh my God, I've hit person. My goodness, we've struck it, everyone. I found Dan's relation. It's amazing. I was just shocked, Dan. Just shocked.
This is starting not to ring true.
Well, and I didn't want to be unfair to you, so
someone's name? Like, how bad an entertainer do you need to be before people are like, we're going to make that your surname?
Yeah, but that's, he gets to be called the mild wasn't bad enough. They were like, you're the bad entertainer. But how's this for funny?
Goodness.
His dad, so 8th century, his dad was Eystein, half Danson. So he was the son of another half Dan, as in our half Dan. His granddad was also half Dan. So half Eystein. So
that would make him a quarter Dan.
He was a quarter Dan. Quarter Dan. That's not, let's not go down that path. This, now I think about it. Anyway, Eystein, half Danson.
It's episode 200 all over again.
It is. So half Dan, oh my goodness. Half Dan, the bad entertainer's dad, Eystein, half Danson. He was called Eystein, the fart.
So is that why his son was considered such a bad entertainer? Because everyone thought that the fart was hilarious. Like that everyone farts, but this guy is like renowned for farting. He is so funny.
And his son.
The dude is like a professional farter. And people would gather around because there wasn't a lot of observational comedy back then, but farting is funny. And then his son came out and was like, oh, do a fart for us. And he'd be like,
Well, maybe that's also why he was half Dan mild.
That guy's a bad entertainment.
He's like, far for me. That's a bit mild.
Like, oh, like, I can barely smell it.
Your father
could knock out a sheep.
That's right. Now, when I looked into the dad, Eystein the fart, because everyone was like, no. Yes, he was called Eystein the fart. But actually, it's because the word fart in Norwegian means fast. It's speedy. So he's actually Eystein the quick. Or the speedy. Yeah. So everyone calm down. It's not a fart joke. And then I did some more research and discovered, no, that's the English translation. Yes, in English, the fart is the speedy. He wasn't called Eystein the fart. He was called Eystein the fret, which is the Norwegian word for fart. So people were like, no, he was literally called Eystein the fart. But when we translated to English, everyone went, he must have meant speedy. No, they didn't. They meant Eystein the fart. In their own language. It's all been, so he's definitely Eystein the fart. Now, Halfdan, the bad entertainer, as in he was nice to his people, like he gave a lot of money away. But when people came round to his house and go, hey, we've done a great battle here, have lots of money. And they go, great, can we come in for a meal? And he would go, no, I'm good.
Oh.
And so they go, can we have some of your sheep and stuff? And they go, no, have some bread and then have some money, but then go. I don't want to have meals with you. That's ridiculous. And everyone went, you're a bad entertainer. And he's like, oh. And then that's how he got the name. So
I see.
I don't know if that was true either. Like, once again, every level I went to, I kept finding a whole new level to this. It's like people kept having – and the other problem was there's so many Halfdans. It's a common name. So everyone would say, well, this Halfdan. And you go, wait, are you talking about – which Halfdan are you talking about? And everyone was getting confused. And what was really weird, I was able to discover – an original recording from King Halfdan, the bad entertainer, like an actual original, like a phonograph or some sort of.
From what year?
9th century AD. So it was like a wax cylinder or something. It was pretty credible. Let me play this for you. So there you go.
Wow. Halfdan, the bad entertainer, really doesn't know how long a joke should go for. Like he really would milk them, wouldn't he?
He really would. And I would like to say thank you very much to Tim Wotherspoon for playing Halfdan the Bad Entertainer there. And there is about
four. The quality of those like clay cylinders is astounding.
It is astounding. He also did, he actually did 4 minutes of material, which I cut down to 1 minute. And it's all gold. It's all gold. So thank you.
And is he a relative of mine?
Tim. Sure. There you go. But Halfdan the Bad Entertainer was a real king. He did exist. He was called the Bad Entertainer. He was the Mild, and his dad was called the Fart. There we go.
Fart.
To be fair, I did go look up for, I thought, you know, it's only fair that I mock myself as well. But I could only find Pope Gregory the Innocent and Gregory the Great. Sorry about that.
Nobody calls themselves Pope Gregory the Innocent. There is a Pope Gregory the Innocent. Done some shit.
But that's fine. But no one said Pope really not innocent. He's, and also Gregory the Great. There's no Bad Entertainer or Fart Dans or no Gregs. No, all great names.
Yeah. Greg totally the Innocent was, yeah. That guy.
It's good to be the Pope.
The people who called themselves innocent are the people who killed the people who were pointing the fingers.
How dare you? How dare you have a go at a namesake of mine who was obviously innocent because they had that at the end of their name, Dan? You're a monster. Not only are you a bad entertainer, you're also a bad friend.
At least I asked you how your week in science was.
How was your week in science, Dan?
I'm glad you asked. I'm staying with cats. This is not my preferred state of being, Gregoire. I am not a cat person. Now, I want to be clear here so that people on the internet hate me for the right reasons. This doesn't mean that I'm a dog person. Mm. At least cats don't bark and howl while I'm trying to record, say, for instance, a podcast. So I resent cats, but I loathe dogs. I am a big fan of baby goats.
Ooh.
Just kidding. Because I'm a big fan of baby goats. So just that's on the baby goat. Yeah, no, that has resulted in a number of misunderstandings. I am full on excited about baby goats, but we say just kidding.
Oh, right.
Because we love baby goats.
Oh, right.
But it's very, yeah. It's.
I thought it was a music. Maybe there was a band called the Baby Goats or something that you. I'm sorry.
Are you the baby goats?
Truly, you are a bad entertainer.
Oh! All right. I like animals that don't lick. Licking is super gross. So, one of the reasons I resent cats is that when I spend time with them, I tend to get kind of congested. Some people are much more allergic to cats than I. Turns out 25% of people are allergic to cats. I know, for instance, that Girl Clumsy is allergic to cats.
Yeah.
Yes, although that might just be the musical. So if I asked you what part of cats are people allergic to, what do you think your answer would be?
The fur. Like hyperallergenic.
That's a good answer.
That's my guess.
That's a good answer. That's what I would have answered. Mm-hmm. Turns out that the main allergen, secretoglobin, comes from the saliva of cats, which would be easy to avoid, but for one small issue. Cats are very clean animals. And when I say very clean, what I mean to say is they wipe all contaminants off themselves using a sheen of toxic mouth goo. Cats are absolutely covered in their own saliva. Well, that's not quite true. There is one spot on a cat that isn't covered in saliva. Gregoire?
Between their shoulder blades.
Correct way of thinking. Although I think cats can get there.
Oh, can they? Oh,
the top of their head.
Oh, right. Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah.
Okay. Tongue's not long enough.
Yeah. They're going to do each other. That's why they...
Well, if you've only got one cat in the house...
Yes.
I could safely give the little poison rag a scritch on the top of the head. No, of course not.
Oh.
The secretoglobin doesn't just come from the saliva. In fact, it comes mainly from the sebaceous glands of the cat, which are very dense on the head.
Also, they do that thing where they lick their paw and then run their paw over their head. Not stupid.
Ah, oh, true.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can do that.
Yeah.
So these monstrous little toe rags, they bathe themselves in their own blight. And I know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking maybe you can love your cat despite the fact that its head and every external part of the cat is an allergen. But you're wrong, because there's one other place the cat secretes this protein, the anal glands. So you can't love your cat that way either.
For lots of reasons, yes.
Cat fucking.
Oh, no, I understood. I got it.
Cool.
I got the. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da Hilarious.
A listener by the name of Alan Lawrence called in, broadcast in, sent a pigeon with a note attached to it, and would like to know why some colours clash. Some colours work together, some colours clash. Now, we know that there is an objectively worst colour.
Okay.
Yeah. Market researchers ascertained that the worst colour ever is Pantone 448C.
Ah, yes. Pantone.
It is described as a drab, dark brown. But I don't think that that articulates just how awful it is. Grégoire, I once worked night shifts for 12 months, 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. shifts. I would eat Night Owl hot dogs and Pizza Hut pizzas. And that's basically it. And when I would use the bathroom, my excretions were not the usual healthy brown, but were instead a slightly more mucousy green. Oof. This, Grégoire, is Pantone 448C.
Oh, it's a greeny brown.
It's a little bit green, but in a pleasant green. It's just, it's a sort of a, it's not a warm brown.
Yeah.
It's like, take brown, go green until it's the worst it could ever be.
Right, okay. Yeah, this sounds unpleasant. This sounds like so what Robin Hood would have actually looked like, you know, like after being in the forest Sherwood for a long period of time.
Maybe if he had a high meat diet.
They did. They really did. Yes.
A lot of rabbit.
Yeah, but and boar.
I heard somewhere that if you only ate rabbit, that there's not enough nutrients in it and you would die, even if you had all the rabbit in the world.
I think there's lots of food like that. Most foods don't have all the food.
Actually, yeah, we've done it. I did a whole segment on this. But
there's very few things you could survive on for the rest of your life.
But quite quickly, rabbit would, like, take you down.
Well, that's because meat isn't – you don't need a lot of meat. Meat has proteins. That's what you need.
Yeah.
And then you only need a very small amount. Your body doesn't need a lot of protein to survive.
So why, Grégoire, would a marketing researcher want to know the worst colour ever?
To not use it in marketing campaigns so all the cool people would buy their products.
Oh, that's a good try. That is incorrect. So sometimes I think of Australia as being kind of regressive. We sell a bunch of dirty coal. Our treatment of Indigenous groups isn't great. A lot of us are kind of racist and homophobic. But occasionally, Grégoire, we lead the pack. And one place where we did that was in curbing cigarette use.
Yeah.
Now, in 1966, the US insisted on health warnings on cigarettes. This was such a boon for the cigarette companies because it put the onus on customers. Mm. It's like, oh, no, you can't sue us. It's right there on the pack. Has been since 1966. And then Canada started to put graphic images with their warnings. But in 2012, Australia brought in a law that required all cigarettes to have generic packaging. You couldn't have your brand on the box, just the same ugly font and the same ugly colour. Oh. Guess what colour that was, Grégoire?
Pantene Hair and Conditioner 7142. Sorry, I got...
Correct. In attitude, if not actual words.
Yay! That's the tagline of the podcast.
The font they use is Lucinda Sans. I wonder whether maybe they could change that to Comic Sans, but then maybe that would appeal more to kids, and that you probably don't want that. So that's one colour that everyone hates. But what makes two colours clash? Why is it that bright red and bright pink make my eye uncomfortable? Why does orange and khaki cause me to look away? Do people with colour blindness see clashes of colour?
I was about to say, you're speaking very much as a person with normal or typical colour vision there, because some of those things...
Normal vision. Typical, that's why I heard you say it. Normal.
Typical,
Not like people with abnormal vision.
Yes.
Mutated and weird vision.
Yes, yes, yes.
Come on, mutant, tell us what your experience is.
Oh, God, I'm a white human who's also male and also colorblind. I'm mutants all the way down. Yes.
Oh, hey, no. No, we don't, in this culture, we don't discuss white men as being mutants.
That's what we are. But, you know, we've talked about this on the podcast before. Okay. I need a couple.
We've got a good thing going here.
There are certain colors that work really well for me, or... you talk about orange. So I'm due to anomalous, so I have an issue with my red cone in my eye. It's not gone. It's just a bit blah. It doesn't work very well. And so I find that very bright oranges and very bright greens are almost the same color. I can tell them apart, but if they're put together, I have a moment where I'm like, is that the same color? And then it takes me my brain a while to work out. Normally, I realize I'm looking at the tone. I'm looking at the my brain picks up something, which I think it's the tone. It's the blackness or the whiteness or there's something about it that I pick up that I can show a difference between. So this, how I register these colors in my brain, sometimes like reds, deep reds and deep greens just blend together, can't see them apart. A tree with all these beautiful red flowers, until I get really close to that tree, I don't understand it has red flowers. People can point them out to me, and I'm like, no idea.
But do you ever see, like, when people say, oh, those colors clash? Are you familiar with the concept of colors clashing?
Yes, yes.
Is it a strong reaction you have, or is
depends
it just
on the
a
color.
Sort of a,
there are
on
certain
an intellectual
colors.
One?
Yeah, no, there's certain colors that clash. But I think for me, my experience is, I think I just have a shorter or more blurred out range of colors. So I was looking, I saw a thing online where they went, if you're due to anomalous, this is what the world looks like to everyone else. And I went, oh my God, it's like this horrible clown crazy world of color and madness. And I felt the gain was turned up and all the colors far too high from my experience. So to answer your question, for me as one person with one type of color blindness, no, I don't think I get affected as much by clashing colors. I think they don't offend me as much. What does offend me is when colors that don't work for colorblind people are used for everyday things, like, you know, stop signs.
Stop lights. Ugh. Yeah.
Just change it to blue. Just make it blue. Red
I
and
mean,
blue.
A stop sign.
Red would, and blue.
You mean stop lights.
I thought it said stop lights. Yes. Yeah.
Stop sign?
I thought it said stop lights.
Because they're just a big octagon. They're easy to spot.
Yeah. And they have stop written on them. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Or in Cyrillic, it's S-C-N-T-P or something.
And in Quebec, it's arrête.
Oh, yes.
And yet in France, it's stop. Because the Quebecois are pretty anal about that sort of thing. So color theory has a bunch of rules about complementary colors. Opposites on the color wheel can work, triads, analogous colors. You can put all sorts of colors together and get something that works. But if you put warm and cool colors together or muted and bright colors together, you can get a result that most people will agree doesn't look quite right. So is this just about fashion and trends, or is there something more at play here? I have searched high and low. I can't find any research, so I thought we would unpick it a little bit here. Maybe the listeners have heard something. But why would we have evolved to find certain combinations of colors unpleasant?
Here's my guess, if you're asking for a guess.
Go on.
I would say it's medicinal. So red, if you see red, it's probably your blood, and that's bad news. You know, you don't want blood around and sickness and things. Bruises are purples and yellows and things. So if you start seeing those blotches on your body, this could be bad. And so they sort of weird, warmy, you get these kind of blair colors. Vomit can be a very greeny, orangey color, yellowy kind of color. Bile color. And I think all these colors evoke a strong reaction or can evoke a very strong reaction.
Certainly red does.
Green, as in grass green, there's a lot of green. Blue is the sky. So it's a very unusual color in the world. I mean, there are blue animals and blue things, but few and far between. I said, but the sky is blue. So that's a positive association, maybe. The sun seems to be a yellowy, warm color. So that's a positive association. I think it's our environment is what I'm trying to say here. And whatever happened with the body or with your experience, that, and as long as it's a general experience, that's what was cool about it. An animal flashes a bright color at you and you're like, oh, that's dangerous. That's going to, you know, kill me.
If you're looking in the ocean, you're looking at sand and sort of deep water and stuff, and suddenly like a vibrant blue-ringed octopus turns up, like the people who are like, yep, this is all normal, they die.
They die.
And the people who are like, Oh, what's that?
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to avoid that.
And why it's a blue-ringed octopus, in my opinion, is because a red-ringed octopus, red light doesn't travel very far through the water. It gets absorbed by the water very, very quickly. So a dangerous octopus would go, I'm red! And everything would go, oh, and kill it anyway and then die, but it wouldn't work. Mm. Where blue can be seen over a longer distance in the ocean. So it's like, I am more blue than blue. Everyone stay away from me. Everyone's like, yep, that little bugger is murderous.
Mm. Well, I had a sort of similar ideas to you. One was that it was a nice healthy day, like nice spring day, and all the grass is like bright green and all the berries are bright green and all the flowers are bright. Sorry, all the berries are bright red and all the flowers are bright yellow and orange. Mm. And then you found something that was sort of not bright, like moldy berries that had sort of gone off. Then that's going to, if you sort of avoided them and just went for the stuff that was bright on a bright day, then maybe that's going to have a certain effect to that's going to embed itself in.
Yeah. Well, things like rotting stuff, and you talked before about your poop, if it goes wrong, then it starts getting greenish, and that those sort of colors are bad colors. I mean, there's green, but then we're like, oh, green and brown, let's not have that, thanks. It's that they shouldn't be together, because like red and brown means that there's probably something wrong in your digestive tract.
And yet green and brown would be totally normal to see if you're in a forest.
Yeah.
They're with the same brightness and such.
And I think as a colorblind person, I'm really not the right person for this, but I'm assuming that, I mean, because all browns aren't brown and all greens aren't green. You mean like they're all, there's many different sorts. And in fact, we've talked this on the podcast before, different cultures didn't have names for different colors until much later. But, you know, in Japan, pinku. And you're like, oh, well, why do you call it pinku? Because they didn't have a name for pink. It was just red. It was just a
light
red or desaturated red. Now we go, but it's pink. You know, it's just red. Calm down. It's a red with a lot of white in it. That's all it is. Or what, if you're thinking paint or desaturated. Desaturated? I keep using the word like I know what it means. I don't know if I'm using the right word.
Desaturated, is like pastel.
Okay. So
something has a high saturation, then it's really vibrant.
Yeah. So I think I'm using the right word then. And there's other color, like they talk about how in some cultures there's no blues. Blues and greens are the same damn thing. So the sky is green. The wine dark sea, like in poetry, in like, why do the Greeks call it the wine dark sea? It's not what wine is the color of the ocean? It just doesn't make sense. But it's probably because they just didn't break the colors up. Bronze and blue, the same color and for a long period of time. How can that be a thing? You know, the only thing I can think of is like for verdigris, which is green in my mind. But if you green and blue are the same thing, and then you call verdigris and bronze the same thing, they're all the same color.
Yeah, well, we think of bronze as being a bronze color. But if you look at the Statue of Liberty, that guy's bronze, right?
It's bronze material, but it's been verdigris all over it. So it's chemically... So maybe it's gone green.
But it's bronze.
Yeah.
And it looks just like the sky.
Yes. Yes. Well, it doesn't. Yes, I know what you mean. Yeah.
So it looks real similar.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see. So it's a whole cultural thing. I was just looking at when you talk about colors and don't work, I was intrigued. I had to think in my brain meets about the Joker from the DC comics, the Batman villain, and the Joker's colors. And the Joker's colors are purples and pinks and greens. And they're horrifically put together.
I mean, originally they were limited, like 8 colors.
Yeah, 4 right back at the start, yeah. That's probably the real reason the Joker's those colors, because they're the 4 ones they could print on the page.
Yeah. They're like, oh, we need a character. We've only got these 4 colors. I'm like, ugh, make him a clown, I guess. Yeah.
Well, Batman's already purple and black, so he's got to be purple and green? You want to hold your colour, you man? We'll make money. Oh.
Please, sir, may I have beige?
Beige! Beige! You'll have bone white like my children do. That's very interesting. So the answer is we don't know, Dan. As we come down to
don't know. Maybe the listeners can help out.
When you were in the womb, Dan, and you were developing, like right back at the start, so you're a couple of weeks in, like you're like, let's do this thing.
I may not be a lot of help here, but go on.
And all of us were. All of us who came from a womb, of course. Then you were developing your little cells a couple of weeks in, and a little yolk sac started to form.
I had yolk?
No, you did not. You had a yolk sac. Oh. And that's the point I'm going to make here. So for a couple of weeks of your embryonic stage, you had an yolk sac, and it had no yolk in it. And it just, it developed and the body spent time, well, I guess the mother's body spent time developing, or I suppose the baby's body developing it. And it grows for a couple of weeks and it gets all kind of developed, no yolk forms. And then the body's like, eh, and it takes it apart and it, you don't have it for much longer.
What a waste of time and effort.
Exactly right. And it's
the first of many projects that I didn't finish.
I got bored, then didn't. And it's been a really one of those weird questions of why do humans have an yolk sac, but no yolk? Is it just like a mistake that just doesn't matter evolutionary wise? You know, maybe it just doesn't affect anyone. But you think it would, in the end, evolution would just make it go away because if it was taking resources that it didn't need, you know, it's a time when the baby needs all these resources to develop something you're not going to use. Does seem like a weird thing to do.
Yeah. Well, you've always said that it's not necessarily that something is good for us that evolution works. It's just that it's not bad for us.
Exactly. Especially there's lots of things in our bodies that are like that or not harmful enough to have to get rid of.
Yep.
And maybe
the
this
appendix.
Yes, but the appendix does also.
The ring finger, the other ring finger. I don't need those.
Your ring finger?
Yeah. Second vertebrae from the bottom. I never use that.
Your coccyx?
Oh, no, I sit on that a lot.
When was the last time you grew a tail, Dan? Not for a long time. It's ridiculous. Anyway, the people were wondering about this yolk sac, and they thought maybe it's just there, and then it goes away because the body goes, oh, wait, crap. Take that down. Like maybe the instructions only kick in later on to remove it. And it's just one of those fun things that we have for a while. Just for our listeners, what would a yolk sac normally be used for an animal?
But that's where like you get a lot of nutritional value to feed the baby.
Yeah, that's the one. Like, say chickens and things and birds. You have a baby bird inside. Yeah.
So there's really dense nutrients in the yolk. And that feeds them. And then I don't know what the white is. I guess there's still nutrients in the white, right?
It's like the embryonic fluid that we swim in. It's just a fluid that we're in. I mean, I'm sure there's other stuff going on. I shouldn't just say it's just a fluid that you're in. But the albumin is the fluid that it's in, that the animal grows in. And the yolk is the nutrients. I'm going to walk away from that question because I didn't look up the albumin. I know the yolk.
Yeah, because there's three parts. There's the yolk and the albumin, and there's another white part. So there's two white parts to your egg. So, and when the bird comes out, I thought it had consumed two of them.
It was definitely consumed the yolk. Yes, the yolk's. Yeah. It's got to get out before the yolk's done. It's got to get out there and start eating, because that's got no food. That's what a bird uses for and anything with an egg. But we're placental mammals, so we get all our nutrients when we're in the womb from the placenta and from
down the pipe.
Yeah. And it's just pumped into us. And we've talked about the podcast before. There's a huge war. Yeah. It's not like, oh, mother and baby working in harmony to 3D print the baby. No, no. The baby's like, give me everything, but I'll die. Says the mother's body. I cannot. And then the mother's like, send things to stop. It's taking all the energy. And it's like, I will create things to take all your energy. And then the mother it's a war. It is a war around the placenta about what it can take and what percentages it can take.
Give me clay. I can't eat clay. Give me clay.
I will take your teeth. Oh, God. So babies are horrible things, terrible, terrible things. But anyway, and then they're born and it all gets worse. But the point of this is we don't need to have a yolk and we don't need to have an egg sac. That's what we're talking about here. But we develop one.
Now, fish, I imagine fish have a yolk.
Yeah, they must.
They must.
Yeah, they're little eggy things. So yeah,
and so all your birds and all your reptiles and all your placental mammals, they all came from some sort of fish, right?
Yeah.
Like, well, there must have been an ancestor of us all that had a yolk.
A tetrapod that laid eggs. Absolutely. Yes, we are a tetrapod. Yes. So we're just an uppity fish. That's basically what we are. We're a fish that wears shoes. That's really it. And complains about eating sushi.
Fascinating concept. The fish that wore shoes. It's a metaphor for humans. Right. Quite like that.
I think it's...
That's sort of wistful.
No. Thank you. I appreciate that. What the heck is this sack for that doesn't fill with yolk? Science finally has the answer, Dan. Thank goodness. Unlike your story, which ended with you going, I don't know, moving on. Maybe our audience can tell us. I found the answer. That was really mean. I'm sorry.
I want you to understand, I already feel guilt about that, but I'd put all this time into, like, describing my poos, and I didn't want to throw it away.
You never throw your poos away, Dan. Never. Keep them. Howard.
What, store them in jars?
Howard Hughes, I'm saying exactly what I'm saying.
Right.
He was a billionaire. Correlation doesn't equal causation, but I'm just saying.
Ironically, that dude was flush.
Very good. Anyway, back to yolk sacs. They discovered, so there was the Wellcome Sanger Institute, which sounds like the most Australian institute ever, but it was not in Australia, unfortunately. The Wellcome Sanger Institute has basically shed light on what these things actually do. These actually serve as a production factory that develop our very first red and white blood cells. So it's like this, it's like a super organ that we develop that goes, all right, this is not the most efficient way of doing this, but this thing is going to do lots of things. So one of the things it does is it develops red and white blood cells, your first ones.
So later, I need those to live.
You do. And later on, they're sort of developed by marrow and that sort of stuff. But to begin with, it's a sac that does it. And it also,
you don't have any marrow to start with.
No, you haven't got any bones.
You're marrowless.
You're a little jelly bugger. That's what you are.
Yeah.
Tiny little jelly person just going, wah, la, 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 la. I look like a fish. I sound like a fish.
This is way before God puts the soul in.
even to fundamentalist, like, people who don't like abortions. I think 6 weeks. This is pre that. So that's, yep. Oh, we're going to get
And the Bible says that they get their soul when the baby takes its first breath. So up until that, it's just a meat machine.
I'm just staying out of all this. I'm just staying out all of this entirely.
I'm not sure that God is real. I can't see any.
Look, I'll go with you on that. Well, and this kind of shows it too, by the way, but let's get back to the yolks. I'm just going to go here. It also makes clotting agents to stop the blood clotting. It also makes metabolic enzymes. It breaks down lipids in the blood, breaks down other bad things as well. So there's lots of things kind of badly to start you off. And then once the body's like, we've got this egg sac, and it goes, God, thank God. Can I retire? Yes. Destroy yourself. Apoptosis. It goes,
So it's like a starter kit.
It's a starter kit for lots of parts of your body.
The baby organ starter kit.
Well, yes, at least the blood starter kit and enzyme starter kit, yes.
So it's not just an empty sac. It's got all this stuff going on.
Yes, quite a complicated thing, absolutely. And what's interesting, another thing that's interesting is the way it does it is how humans do it, but not how any other animal does it. That's the same for every animal, by the way. So our starter kit, as you put it, you can't just transplant that into another animal because the signals would all be wrong and the animal just wouldn't get the right signals. So it's the human starter kit for the blood and the enzymes I was talking about before. That's really cool. So it's a little sac that develops for a couple of weeks, kickstarts you, and then never fills with yolk, and then absorbed back into the body, and you don't have it after about 6 weeks of your development. And that's it. It's just gone. So thank you, egg sac. Thank you.
Russia is invading the Ukraine. It is just the worst. It is such an atrocity. Do you know why, Gregoire?
Let's face it.
That's right, because potatoes are more expensive. Not here, not fresh potatoes. We grow our own potatoes here. But wherever they pay foreigners pennies a day to make potato chips. So now all the potato chips are more expensive. I think I might be suffering the most from this war because I love potato chips.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So what is a clever clogs like me to do?
Oh, please don't tell me you're joining the Russian oligarchy elite or something weird like that.
I bought a popcorn machine.
Oh, my God.
From some Nazis.
There it is. They sure know how to. No, don't.
Terrible. No.
But just listeners, just so you know, my brain thought it, and then I was like, at this stage of my life, I don't need to say horrific stuff for shock value. I'll leave that to Dan. Right.
Fair enough. Oh, yep, fair enough. There is a popcorn kernel clink joke in there.
Oh, no.
But I'm not.
No.
The audience for that joke is so small, and I can't
easily put it together.
Here's a good question, though. Hogan's Heroes, like the comedic show about American soldiers in prisons of war in World War II, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be made today, would it? You know, comedy Nazis and, because, you know, I know it's like.
I mean, it came out in like the 60s or something.
Yeah.
Like this wasn't that long after.
Yeah.
Like imagine someone doing like The Office, but 9/11.
Yeah. We may be onto something.
But then I guess didn't they do that? That's My Bush or something? Didn't they do a sitcom about George Bush's home life or something?
Right. Oh, probably. Was it very popular?
I wonder if Hogan's Heroes was actually biting satire at the time.
Maybe. I mean, you'd have to set it up. Maybe what you'd do is you'd set one in Baghdad post second Iraq war with America. And then you would talk about doing their reconstruction. Or Afghanistan. Is that? No, that's a bit too close still. But yeah, that part of the war, the reconstruction of Baghdad. And then you're like, oh, I am from Mosul. And then everyone would go, oh, no. Like comedy reconstruction people.
I think that culture realizes that there is more nuance these days. I think back in the 60s, you could just be like, those guys are bad guys and we're the good guys. So they're the dumb guys and we're the smart guys. Mm. And these days, if you did that, it wouldn't satisfy like it may once have.
Also, the Nazis in that 60s show were perceived as either incompetent bureaucrats or idiots.
They did it again with a lower low. The goofy.
Good point. Yeah, but they were Nazis. Goofy. Yes, they were goofy Nazis. So you're like, it wasn't a homosexual Nazi that no one realized. Well, he realized.
He was quite camp.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So that was like the joke. But that's also saying, what a pack of dumb idiots and how clever the French were and the English were. Well, no, the English were dumb too, but the French were clever. So you, as long as you portray the real monsters as fools, maybe you can get away with it.
You know, mate, I wonder if you could do this, make a sitcom about a militia, like a US militia, where they're all dumbos and they're trying to get their militia to work. And like one of them wants it to run like a well-oiled machine, but it's all this like misgrouping. Like, unfortunately, you do risk endearing them to the audience. Yes. Like they would need to, they would require growth.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. So they like basically you go like it's the Proud Boys sort of thing, but they're all idiots. But they are all idiots. They are all idiots. So Jersey Shore meets Proud Boys.
Yeah,
they're real people though.
Well, so are the Nazis.
What? Anyway, we got really off topic. What were we talking about? Sorry, I have no memory of what we were talking about originally.
Popcorn.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Oh, that's right. How sick you were at the Ukrainian war because of your lack of potatoes. So you bought a popcorn maker.
Yep.
So it still doesn't make any sense. Yep. You've not joined these dots.
Well, I need snacks and I can't afford potato chips because they're so expensive.
That's the connection. So, I thought it was going to be like making potatoes out of popcorn machine.
No, you can't do that. That's playing God. No, I can't afford the snacks that I love.
Oh, right.
Potato chips.
I see.
Because they used to be like $2 for a big bag and now they're like $8 for a small bag.
Can I just break in? Listeners, sweet listeners, did you make that connection? Because I love Dan like a brother, but that was a hell of a connection. You are a bad entertainer. That's not true. I'm sorry.
How dare you?
Please go on. I know you're going to land the plane. You always land it. Your takeoff, sir. I'm shonky as hell, but you land them beautifully. Go.
I'm still stinging from being called mild.
You fart like a champion.
That was the real shot through the heart, being called mild. All right. So I bought a popcorn machine. It is ostensibly a hairdryer that blows hot air on popcorn kernels. It sucks. It's crap. Anyone who has tried one of these air popcorn machines knows just how tragically bad they are. They spin the kernels around until they pop. Now that they are light and fluffy, they get caught by the air more effectively and rise up and puff out into the bowl. That's the theory behind them. Instead, the light fluffy ones catch the unpopped kernels and knock them into the bowl unpopped. So the bowl fills up with both popped kernels and hot, unpopped ones. These very hot kernels are still under pressure and some of them pop
after they've found their way to the bottom of the popped kernels and blow them all out and onto the floor where the cat hair is. I have never found a well-designed air-popped popcorn machine. It seems like this is a simple design problem, to which I'm sure there are listeners who respond, yes, you put it in a big pot full of oil and you put it on the stove, which I should probably do. But it got me thinking, Gregoire, how does popcorn work? Because popcorn has a hard shell and it's got moisture and oil inside of it. And when you heat the kernel to 356 degrees Fahrenheit, it expands into a gas and the pressure increases throughout the kernel. And that's about as far as I knew.
It's a protein thing, isn't it? It's no starch. So it's a chemical change of the starch.
You're right.
Ooh, that's all I know. I don't know what the chemical change is, but
Well, there is something else happening in there.
Going on or something. Do you want to go back saying there's never been a popcorn maker that works? I think we should create the smarter, the better infrared laser popcorn generator
that just targets all the popcorn kernels from the top down.
Fire, boom, fire, fire.
There is an interesting reason why that wouldn't work, and we're going to get to that later.
Oh, damn it. Excellent. I'm glad. Thank you. I didn't waste billions of our Patreon money on development.
Wait, billions?
That's moving on.
I haven't checked that account in a while.
All in Nazi gold. You get more money for Nazi gold.
I know nothing.
Oh, dear. Oh.
Okay. All right, so what happens inside this popcorn kernel is you have the oil that gets really hot and the water that gets really hot, and it's under pressure. It can't escape, and it gelatinizes the starch. So you have this very hot gel.
Say it again,
that's under
plenty of pressure. Say it again. It was very sexy. Say it again.
It gelatinizes the starch.
Mm, baby.
You have this very hot gel that's under plenty of pressure. So when the shell fractures, instead of pushing out starch fibers and oil droplets, it's a homogeneous foam that inflates. Now, you need the right temperature, which, again, is 356 degrees Fahrenheit.
I had a partner who once called me a homogeneous foam that inflates. We didn't last very long. I had an eating disorder. It's very sad.
There's also a no homo joke there.
Oh, okay.
And I can't.
Oh, really?
No homogenous.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's very good.
You see?
Oh,
yeah, I see. No homogenous.
Yeah, but you'd never make it. You'd go,
You'd
be like, no, I'm a genius. It's a wonderful joke about homogenizing food, but you would get beaten to death before you could get those words out.
Yeah.
And rightly so, you know.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to do that. And I'll definitely edit this bit out.
God damn it. But not the Nazi gold comment. I'm stuffed with that one, aren't I?
We're all stuffed with that stuff. We have 12 years of what can successfully be called evidence. All right. So the popcorn kernel heats up 356 degrees Fahrenheit. If the kernel heats up too slowly, don't shake your head. It's a real measurement.
No, that's not.
If the kernel heats up too slowly, steam leaks out and it never hits that critical mass of pressure required to explode the shell. If the kernel heats up too quickly, say if you hit it with a laser...
Yes. Get the best popcorn ever.
No. The shell fractures before the internals can gelatinize. It is a delicate balancing act, whilst at the same time a historically common snack to enjoy whilst watching a delicate balancing act. So, how do you get popcorn kernels in the first place? Is it just normal corn that they do something to?
I honestly thought it was just normal corn that was dehydrated. Kept it in the sun.
It is not.
I'm so sorry. I take that back.
All corn has a shell over each kernel. Sweet corn is bred to have a soft shell. Popcorn is a variety of corn that is bred to have a hard shell.
So it is just corn.
Well, they are bred from different varieties of corn, but they have a common ancestor.
The tetrapod. It's got an egg yolk. Sorry.
An arthropod?
No.
Oh, yeah, it's a shell.
Sure.
Crab f***ed a piece of corn. No, it's a Mexican plant called a teosinte, and it began to be cultivated 10,000 years ago on the American continents, where Mexico is now. It wasn't Mexico back then, but it
it eventually became Mexico.
It's I like the idea they just made this thing. They're like, what's this for? One day we'll be able to heat it enough quickly and we'll eat it. What can we do now? Nothing. Truly nothing. Damn it.
Well, it didn't take long for that to happen.
Oh, okay.
You would be surprised. People have been popping corn for 7,000 years.
Can you imagine when the first person to accidentally stumble across that, like a fire goes through the popping corn field and they're like, ah, oh, fields are destroyed. And there's like, and the gods are shooting at us. Like, what the hell is, like, it'd be very scary.
It's like, the fuck is that? I'm going to put it in my mouth.
There's so many times humans have said, what the fuck is that? And then put it in their mouth. And now we call it a luxury item. This is just,
yeah.
This is just,
yeah,
how humans.
That's called a cuisine. So sweet corn gets picked when it's nice and juicy. But if you've ever left corn, do you need a moment?
Sorry, I apologize. Yes.
Yeah. For those listeners listening, well, that's all of you, I guess. By definition.
No, half of them are not.
There's one of those fucking dogs in the background that I was complaining about before. Oh, monstrous little animals. You don't get this from goats. Just kidding. All right. Where was I? Sweet corn gets picked when it's nice and juicy. But if you've ever left corn too long, you'll note that it goes leathery. Popcorn gets left on the stalk until it's dry. It has less moisture and ends up with a much harder shell. There's no additional processing required, although you can artificially dry it rather than waiting for that feet-dragging lollygagger Chad, the Earth's son, to do the job for you. So that, listeners, is the story of popcorn, a 10,000-year-old grass cultivated to make its fruit small and dry, heated to form a gel, exploded under pressure where it flies across the room and under the fridge. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Walk of Shame segment. We don't have any sort of normal Walk of Shames this time. There are a couple of bits of feedback we might get into, though. I might start. You remember a couple of podcasts ago, I was talking about how thinking about body parts and which body parts are up here and down there and where the boundary is.
Yes, yes.
And I asked listeners to contact us about how they
thought.
You
asked me, and I just thought you were insane. I still don't quite understand.
You thought I was insane, and that's not that, like that's a more common reaction than I expected.
Oh, right, okay, good.
Oddly enough, people are like, who cares? It's like, but being interested in like stuff like this is how humans get better at being humans, and suddenly you've got iPads and like sex toys, and so. I'm proud of my weird curiosity. I don't think it's weird. It's normal to have this sort of curiosity when you're a fish with shoes. At any rate, my brother responded. So obviously, it's something in the Halfdan genealogy that we're thinking about this. And he had such an interesting reaction because he said, "Well, when I hum." And I hum a high note, then that's up here. And when I hum a low note, that's down there. I was like, but where would the boundary be? And I'm like, oh, well, we've talked about this on the podcast. Our ears are sort of tuned to middle C. That's what makes a middle C. Mm-hmm. And so that's like we calibrate to that note. Mm. So potentially for him, anything under middle C is down there and anything above middle C is up here.
So you have to find, but it's not like one point in his throat that is making a middle C noise. It's the whole thing is vibrating at a certain mode.
But it feels like it. Like it feels, if you go, it feels further down than if you're like,
Yeah, and people say, yeah, back of the throat, top of the throat, or top of the mouth. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was a really unique response to that philosophical question of what's up here and down there.
Let's be honest. If it was going to be a unique response, it would definitely be coming from a Beeston. There's a good chance it would be coming from a Beeston.
Yeah.
You are
special.
Society's unique response.
Hooray.
That's not an insult. That wasn't an insult.
You didn't need to say that, did you? The fact that you had to say that makes me wonder.
Moving on with the next question, the bit of feedback we got from the podcast.
You look real evasive. It was all.
As you know, as part of the podcast, we have an insult section. Dan, every time, insults our most cash-rich members of our Patreon. Patreon group, which we love very much. We'll get to later on. And those insults are insults. That's the whole point. And we always try to make them so that they're not actually really, really horrendous, but they still have to have some bite to them. And otherwise, it's just a gag. And that's a really hard line to walk. And I always respect the amount of work Dan puts into these things. And unfortunately, one has sort of, we got a bit of feedback about one in the last one, which I just wanted to bring up. And I'm bringing it up and not Dan, because I don't write them, but it's my podcast as much as Dan is. And so I stand behind what he does and what he works on. And I put my name to it as much as he does. So yeah, Dan is very.
And I hold you fully responsible for anything that happens in the segment where you're forcing me yes. to do insults.
There is that,
right? This is legally
it all
this
falls
is the monkey on your back.
It is.
I am
the Oppenheimer.
What does water go off?
I am the Oppenheimer to your nuclear weapon, Dan. You did the damage.
Yes.
I developed.
Yes.
It. Anyway, the point of this is we got some feedback saying that one of the jokes was in bad taste. And the joke was about how if you are a blood donor, you can't give blood if you're a homosexual man in Australia because your blood will be not accepted.
Oh, it was unacceptable.
Unacceptable, that's right, yes. And the point we made was, and we sort of said it was a nuanced, like, and we went, oh, no, like, oh, I did my usual thing, which is like Dan's naughty and I do the whole, oh, no, Dan, what are you doing? And then we'd use the word nuanced. And the person writing in pointed out as a gay person that was kind of offensive and that it's, you know, to us it's a joke, but to them it was it's actually a really hurtful thing. We thought about that for a while. The side we came down was we never really want to upset people. That's not what we're trying to do here. We don't spend all this time going, you know what would be great? Making people sad. Dan and I are not gay men. We're just not. And so this offended a gay man and a number of gay people. And yeah, it's not something we want to do. We never wanted to be hurtful, but intent doesn't equal impact. So yeah, sorry about that. Didn't mean to do it. Wasn't intentional. Thanks for letting us know. Really appreciate it. Anytime we make big mistakes like that or you don't like what we're doing or you have a reason to contact us, get in contact with us. Let us know. It's anywhere we learn things, everyone. We will do our best not to be dicks in the future.
I can't commit to that. Hey, on a positive note, I just learned some amazing stuff is the CRISPR people or the people with access to CRISPR have learned something really important about the HIV virus. And what this means is that there's no reason that we can't develop a cure to HIV, a cure
right.
to stop people to get rid of HIV. It's the new polio.
Oh, wow. Really?
It might take some time. Yeah. It might be 20 years down the road. Yeah. But this is a proof of concept that
it can be done.
The fact that we can do this, it can be done.
I wonder if within 1 year we went from having no vaccine for COVID to having a vaccine for COVID. In fact, it was much faster than that. You know, it took time to prove it was safe and then get it out there. I wonder if it's just because not enough people have HIV and not, inverted commas, the right people have HIV that we're not moving as fast.
They just found it.
Oh, okay, right, okay.
So
it could move very quickly. That's very cool. Well, that's good. I like that. Yay, humanity. Yay, humans, I say. Yay, gene editing.
They're amazing.
There's no downside to gene editing.
I take full responsibility. Full credit. You have been listening to Dan at smartenough.org.
Also Greg at smartenough.org.
Those are email addresses.
They are.
If you would like to support the podcast,
wow,
you can get along.
You're so wise, Dan, telling the youth about this old technology.
It could be a Mastodon account. Like, they take the same sort of form.
I'm sure it does.
You can get along to the website and you can say something about the episode there.
Yeah, please
you can
do.
Type stuff in. Type stuff in on the website.
Oh, what?
There's a comment section and there's some buttons and stuff you can do and you can support us in all sorts of manners. And if you join our Patreon at a level of $5 US, then we will read your name out just like I'm about to do now. Thank you very much to Ivand, Matthew Toy, Matt Ewers, Andrew Potts, Lindsay Jenkinson, Andrew Trousdale, Avi Greenbury, Elizabeth Yunkin, Ilana Mitchell, Gronya Maguire, Mariana Scott, Britta Rogowski, and Andrew Whitehurst. Thank you all so much for your support. I quite like reading all your names out now. Like, now I've got the hang of it. I don't think I'm getting them too wrong. And, yeah, it feels like they're all good names.
Oh, good names. Good, strong names.
So if you are a top tier patron, then I have to insult you. And this has never gone wrong.
Never.
never gone wrong. So I have insulted people using hot beverages. Now I'm doing the same with cold beverages.
Sure.
All right. So
I'd like to point out that after last time, I'm just like, I'm laughing, but it's that laughter of fear. It's a laughter of, oh, God.
Oh, yeah. You have dug us into a hole here, Craig. I blame you for all of this. So,
I think you say it like that because it feels like that you're like leading into like, this is the last episode ever and I'm going out taking us all with a scorched earth, everyone. Please.
Oh, no, I reckon you'll feel it in your bones when I'm ready to scorch earth this segment.
True. You'll get a look in the eye. I know you pretty well. You get this look in your eye and they'll be like, it's time to go.
Yeah. Okay. So, big thank you to Michael Kadar. You are like water, transparent and tasteless.
Slightly blue.
Joey Wesley. Now, this one involves the service that used to be called Twitter, or as it is now spelled, mathematical double struck capital X. Mm. So, heaps of people on mathematical double struck capital X hate you.
Good, good.
So, that is related to cold beverages. Because I am constantly hearing people on mathematical double struck capital X say that they hate the juice. And can I just say that their spelling leaves a lot to be desired as well?
Oh, Dad. Look, no, hey, wait, hang on. Yes, you're mocking them. That's fine. Okay, good. Fine. Okay. Not them, as in the people on the site formerly known as Twitter.
Mm. Okay. Tom Seary, you're like a tall glass of milk. You got where you are by sucking. Steve Stewart, without external support, you constantly go downhill. Steve Eichenhout, you are like a frosty glass of beer. You give me a headache. And finally, Robert Shelton, you are like cola. The only people who like you have been tricked by manipulative advertising.
Sure. Most popular soft drink in the universe, but sure,
every
why not?
Every other carbonated beverage tastes better than Coke or Pepsi. It's a fucking scam. Wake up, sheeple!
Okay, all right. I'm sorry. Oh, gosh.
And a big thank you to the top-tier patrons. I don't have to insult Al Batson, Scott Driscoll, Eric Wilson, Morden O'Hare, and Michael Barnes. You guys make me go all runny.
Yeah.
So far as other stuff that's going on, Autoforge. I worked on a video game. It has a Kickstarter now. So if you want to play a game I worked on, check it out. It will be linked to at smartenough.org in the show notes for episode 202.
We have some pretty bad news. A very good friend of ours, Stuart Late, who has been on the podcast, episode 23 and episode 6, and in many, many of our sketches, we called him the Chocolate Voice Mountain God, has passed away. Our great friend passed away last Tuesday, leaving behind his family, his wife, and his small child. It's very sad. I don't know what else to say, really. Super, super sad. And and I feel very sorry for his family. I feel sorry for Natalie as well, a girl clumsy, because she worked with him for years on the Raven On podcast. It's been a big blow that came kind of out of nowhere.
Feel sad for me.
Yeah. A couple of days ago, I gave Natalie a big hug and I went, oh, Natalie, we've lost two friends. She's like, what? And I went, well, you lost a friend and I lost a friend. We've lost two friends. And she was like, yeah, we have lost two friends. And that's what it feels like. He was a good friend of ours, a lovely man, a brilliant journalist. And people say this stuff, but he really was. And the amount of outpouring from his community, the journalism community, has been amazing. Even the Premier of Queensland mentioned him in a parliamentary sitting, which is unheard of. I don't think a member of parliament's going to mention my name unless it was like, he was him. Greg Waugh destroyed the world.
Yeah.
Anyway. Anyway, I'll get mentioned. I got nothing to say, really. I don't want to make a big clever point of it. It's been an absolute horror. And I'm thankful for the time I got to spend with him. And his big, boisterous, easily given laugh will always echo in my head.
Yeah. Yep. He didn't want to go and nobody wanted him to go.
No.
And that's kind of a great death then. Imagine people like, oh, thank Christ, that guy's gone.
He actually pointed this one out, Dan, so I will credit you with credits due. He was a big proponent of Twitter well before Twitter was a thing, like right back for journalism. Like he was a really well ahead of the curve. Other journalists were not thinking this. He was like, no, Twitter's going to be a thing. And he was absolutely right. And he hung on right to the bitter end with Twitter / mathematical.
Mathematical double struck capital X.
That's the one. And just weirdly, in July the 2nd, he made a tweet. This is not about his passing, but good Lord, it may as well be. And it was talking about the end of that service. So he wrote at DiscoStew, if all of this actually does go away soon, let me say it's been genuinely great talking to the people I actually talked to on here. You're all good and you should know you're appreciated. It was fun. Nothing lasts forever and maybe that's okay.
And as we always like to say,
we are the Pantone 448C of podcasts.
That is the greatest tonal shift we have ever done.
Yeah.
And if you say the wrong word, you can just type in the right word and it'll just do it. It'll listen to your voice and then go, I'll just make up the word if we're using your voice. It's like, ooh. All right, well, I'm glad I'm in control of that and not Greg.
All the wonderful things I'm about to say about Dan. Dan, you're a total wonderful man. Everything you do is just utter brilliance.
All of the planets are made out of cheese. I'm not sure that's true, astrophysicist Gregoire. Let's just go to Wikipedia and change.
Wow, you're a man of many voices. Uncanny. Just the best. Just chat now. Just say a few words.
I'd like to thank the father of the bride for not shooting me with his shotgun. Obviously, we both knew that I needed a little bit of encouragement, and his firearms are encouragement enough. And quite frankly, he doesn't need to stand near the only exit in the building because I am quite resigned to my lifetime of joy with his daughter.
Oh yeah, you got to hold down a button, and then you hold it for 2 seconds, and it changes the next setting. It's one button that does everything, but it's all lovely and black, and with a little glowing light that you only see once you remember to press the button down for 3 seconds.
Very convenient. There's only one button. You just have to remember 16 different ways to press it.
That's right.
And convenient. If the police officer tells you to do something illegal and you do it, who gets booked for the illegal thing?
I think you would originally, if they're going to play that game, then you would take it to court and they'd say, he made me jaywalk and said, you have to now jaywalk officially, and then got you for it. They would get you for jaywalking and then you take it to court and then they'd say, that cop was a naughty cop, and then you'd get off.
And that happens every time, right?
I don't
know. Because I am white, so that should all play out fine, okay?
It'll play out.
Yeah, okay.
Dan and Greg talk about laws they don't really understand.
They're not allowed to look in my drugs, though, right? If I've got a big bag that says drugs.
Yes, then that's right. And you have to say, if you think someone's a cop, you have to say, hey, you have to tell me if you're a cop.
Yeah.
That's by law. That's why I always start every conversation with, hi, Dan, you have to tell me if you're a cop. Hi, Dan, you have to tell me if you're a cop.
I understand the premise.
That's your response?
Mm. Well, I only have to tell you if I'm a good cop.
Dan Beeson, bad cop.
Yeah. As long as this isn't being recorded, I should be fine.
Allegedly. Thank God we know lawyers.
A lawyer. The same lawyer. If we ever come to blows, it's going to be a race to the phone.
I would assume our lawyer friend wouldn't, if we ever actually got into trouble, we wouldn't want our lawyer friend to defend us, but we would ask our lawyer friend to find someone to defend us.
What, someone better? Yeah, I'm going to tell you said that. She's going to undermine your argument.
A lady lawyer? Find me someone better, as in a man. Oh dear. Allegedly. Oh God, what have I done? Books finally have a use. Look at that. Filthy, mite-covered horrors. They burn so easily.
They make great kindling if you want to burn down a library.
They're self-fueled. That's so good. Look, hey, I'm just saying, if libraries weren't for burning, why were they made of very flammable items? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, that's
should
just
have chiseled it in stone, shouldn't you?
All right. Oh, okay. Sorry. Oops. See, I was thinking about a different song, a different piece. Sorry, we'll take it from there. It's too fast. Damn it. You see, okay, I had the bit in my mind. You were thinking, I heard you thinking something else, and that threw me. So, try energy. That's too fast. Breathing very loudly, so that messes with my left hand. Right hand, sorry. It's my left hand. It's the other one. Damn it. Where are you going? Damn it. Wait, hang on. Okay. Sit down. It's not going to be right twice, is it? If it's wrong both times. So, sorry. I'm saying things out loud that... Okay. All right. Let's go again. That's too fast.